Everybody wants to be a beast until it's time to do what beasts do.
On this episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast, we are joined by Larry Cordero, the assistant coach at Troy University. Coach Cordero has built a long career in college basketball with stops at LSU, UT Arlington, Southeastern Louisiana, and Troy, along with a 9-year run as a head coach at LSU Alexandria, where he helped build a strong and consistent program. His experience across multiple levels of the game gives him a unique perspective on program building and leadership. In this episode, we discuss how he established culture when there wasn't an existing tradition and how he maintained that success over the years as a head coach, what motivated him to return to the Division I level as an assistant after 9 seasons leading a program, and what makes Troy's head coach, Scott Cross, such a unique leader. Please welcome to the podcast, Larry Cordero. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. What's going on, everybody? We are back with another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Alan Major, Doug Caputo, alongside us today. We're fortunate to be able to have someone who has a great history, head coaching career, but the current assistant coach at Troy University, Coach Larry Cordero. Coach Cordero, welcome.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me today.
Go Trojans, man. Go Trojans.
We're going. Yes, sir. Appreciate that.
I was just going to say, the first thing we want to address is congratulations to you guys, the Sun Belt champions, going into, when we're recording this, going into the dance. Now, when this may be released, there may be some news as to what happens after that, but just congratulations to you guys. Obviously, there's some great things going on over there. And especially, as I mentioned in the beginning, you have some head coaching background, which we will touch on later. I'm not going to go too into it now, but I know you've done some things that a lot of people probably dream to do someday. But before we even get into any of that, you've experienced really every level of college basketball, almost every level, I should say. Op roles, LSU, assistant roles, building over at LSU Alexandria from the ground up, straight to a national contender as a head coach. When you look back on those early years getting into being that head coach, what were those like? Talk about those early years, starting a program from scratch, and then just really having to dive fully into it.
Well, before we get into the head coach at LSU Alexandria, just to start off my basketball coaching career, I was an accounting major. I was a student at LSU, and I went up and did an internship in Cedar Rapids, Iowa, and discovered there what I wanted to do for a career, like a calling, is coaching. And I asked myself this question: what would I do for free? I didn't want to tuck my shirt in, wear a nice button-up shirt like I've got on today. I wanted to coach basketball is what I answered that with. And so I was able to get a very lucky break as Antonio Hudson was going to LSU at the time. And my father and Rustin knew his high school coach, Mike Lyons. And we just connected the dots to Butch Pierre and John Brady, and I was able to get in as a volunteer student assistant. Did a good job that first year, flipped that into the first graduate assistant, if you will. I was a director of operations at age 22 years old. I shot just 1 year, but you know, that was an awesome time in my young career that I didn't know I was about to get into. And I did 3 years there and moved to UT Arlington, fresh out of college from there, and worked with Scott Cross, who's my boss today at Troy University. So it's just a relationship business, as we were talking about earlier. But you know, just to fast forward, after being 10 years as a Division I assistant basketball coach, I was able to get an opportunity to start a program from scratch. Didn't know, you know, when that break would come, or didn't understand really the NAIA level. But 2 hours south of Ruston, Louisiana, is a medium-sized town called Alexandria. And I was able to be the head coach for nine good seasons. Feel like we birthed an infant into a toddler, into a young boy. And then, you know, it came to a point in the time where it was time for me to do something different. And I'm sure we'll get to all that. But I just remember pulling up on the campus of LSUA, and there was a sign God literally had for me. Psalm 32:8 said, "I will instruct you and show you the way you should walk." And just was following his lead. And, you know, that's what we did, is we just tried to do it God's way for 9 years. And if I'm never a head coach again, that's cool. I had a great time doing it and mentoring these young men and keeping relationships to this day. But that was, you know, a great time in my career at LSU Alexandria, for sure. One that I'm very thankful for, that challenge. You know, I always say you should only start a program from scratch just once in your lifetime. Once is enough, because it was like a marathon. And I was able to run a marathon 3 months before I moved to Alexandria in April of 2014 in Baton Rouge as an assistant at Southeastern Louisiana. I was able to run 26.2 miles, kind of a bucket list thing, and I'll never do another one. I can do some halves, but, you know, the correlation of, you know, the physical training and being in shape and mentally locked in, you know, that's what it took in Alexandria, just really just kind of to getting through things and finding solutions and not having ice baths. So we're going to make trash can ice baths and just you name it, man. I mean, we could talk for 2 hours about those 9 years.
You know, what's great about that is, and I love the analogy, because people that run marathons, they always talk about their training, and you have to win that journey. You have to win chunks. You have to win the chunks, right? And like, whether it's 3 miles at a time, or every runner's got their kind of game plan of how they want to break it down, but winning those chunks, and then that allows you to get to the next chunk. And then you got to get your mind right, because there's another chunk, and then you got to figure that out. And sometimes the race, you probably feel, really didn't start till about mile 22, because then the mental part of finishing it is a whole nother probably conversation altogether. But when I was at Charlotte, and they started football from scratch there, and Brad Lambert was the coach at the time and a great guy. But I remember just the entire year he went with no players on campus. You know, he just actually literally spent the entire year recruiting, and they're putting it all together. And then all of a sudden these guys show up, and then they got another year to get organized, and then they started playing. But that had to be that's a lifetime experience for sure, because like you said, once is probably enough, but to be able to have that in your background as an achievement, you probably have the same feeling as you did when you crossed the finish line of the marathon.
For sure. Let me rewind back real quick. The interview experience timeline was, they're starting a program in August. We interviewed in September. I accepted and did a press conference, and I'm at Southeastern in my eighth and final year. And I didn't want to move up like the women's coach did and not have a team, not have a season. So I was blessed by my boss, Jim Yarbrough. He allowed me to coach. And I'll never forget that Jeff Moore, who's now at Bossier Parish Community College coaching, he was at Northwestern State. We were in layup lines before the game. And he said, "Larry, you're the only guy in the country that could do two jobs at one time." So I was able to kind of tiptoe a little bit, but I had a notebook. Those anybody that knows me, I keep composition books. I've got one right here. I probably got 50 of these things since I was a student at LSU. And I just that was back when I used to write lyrics and lines. I called myself wanting to be a music artist. But anyway, now there's a bunch of basketball notes in there. But seriously, I had a blue composition book, because at the time LSU A colors were blue and yellow. They later changed to purple and gold. But it was the blueprint. And literally took notes. I had a season of bus trips and just thinking ahead of time. And so really we hit the ground running come April 1st. I'd already had a staff of Casey Apetri, who was at Frank Phillips Junior College. And then Brian Terwilliger was a student manager at Southeastern Louisiana. He joined forces. And Jay Smith, who's currently at Texas State, he was at Como High School, and we all, I mean, really, I don't even know, I didn't have a paid assistant. I barely got paid. So I had those three guys, myself, and come to be, and we didn't know that we would meet young student manager, soccer player, freshman, Daniel Roy, who ended up ditching soccer in Alexandria and became full-time. It was one of the best student managers for 4 years. He's now got a longer title than I can remember with the Chicago Bulls. But just looking back on that staff that we created, and yeah, definitely didn't do it alone.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's awesome. Lifetime experience in itself, man. Love that.
So this composition book, I want to go back to that real quick. So that's something that you take down notes just whenever your mind is running, you jot something down. Do you ever go back to that, like in your head coach or even now as an assistant? Do you go back to those and just look back on the things you wrote?
I do. I've got them dated. I've walked into team meetings when I was a head coach with another coach. I've probably got 50. I can't carry them all at one time. And I've got them on the bookshelf and they're all in order. And for sure, it's just like a running journal. It could be life stuff. It could be marathon training. It could be, you know, most of it's probably basketball or just daily schedules. You know, now that we've got these phones and they've got notes in there, I've got notes for sure in there as well. But I used to probably go through maybe two or three of these in a year. Maybe I only go through one. And not putting as much down on paper, but yeah, those things have helped me. I can go back through and look, and you, instead of having 1,000 yellow sticky notes, which I, you know, we do those too, but it's a place to keep everything together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
I need to get up to technology times and get the, I've seen a guy a few years ago, I don't know the name of what they're called, but you know, I'm old school, man, pen and paper.
Yeah, no doubt.
Probably the iPads, yeah, and then talk to text. You could just implement stuff into there. But the thing about those is that's great because, excuse me, you can look back on your notes, especially for you. You're a head coach. You write down all these things, and they always talk about, people always forget. Like, you'll think about something. I write down notes during practice all the time. Every practice, I always carry a pencil, and then I have my paper that has the practice plan. And I always go in and I write down notes because every time my coach says, what do you think? What should we work on? I completely forget half of it. And I remember the last two drills we did. So I always sit there. I'll walk, write something down real quick, go back. So then I have all my notes to go back as soon as practice is over. Hey, this and this. So I think that's great. And that's even more extensive because now you're looking, you have a full book of them all. I just have a day full of them.
I don't know who's going to get all these years to come down the road, but it's neat to be able to go back through. I mean, writing on your hand or calling your voicemail and leaving a message and, you know, the things you do to try to remember stuff.
Yeah, no doubt. Never trust your mind. That's for sure.
And to give everybody reference to, for your time at LSUA as a head coach, 224 wins to 50 losses. So the record is absolutely like phenomenal. 8 NAIA tournament appearances, a berth in the national championship in 2018. So you obviously, that's why I was saying in the beginning, it's evident that what you were doing and the notes you're taking, the notes have definitely helped out in the long haul. Say, going into that job, how does one, or did you not only build a culture, but then maintain that over the years of success? Because especially now, it's a little bit more difficult, I would say, because you have people who transfer in, transfer out. You got ever-rotating rosters. How did you build that culture and then really maintain it through the years of success?
I would just say through hard work was the first thing. I got to shout out my father, who also started a company called Today's Realty in the 1970s. My oldest brother, he built a baseball stadium in Omaha. He's the general manager president of the Storm Chasers. They used to play in Rosenblatt with the NCAA, and they would share it, and they kind of parted ways. So, you know, I've had examples of my mother raised, you know, five kids. You know, that right there is, you know, starting a family, and we've all done solid so far. So, you know, it just, I was able to be around, you know, sports as a child, as, you know, having two older brothers and a younger sister and a younger brother being right there in the middle. And that's, you know, all we did was play basketball, full court, tournaments, brackets, wiffle ball, neighborhood, the city. I mean, you name it. It was who the Corderos were in Ruston, Louisiana. And, you know, I take that passion, that love, that joy to, you know, every day and to these college basketball student athletes, these programs. And to answer your question, it was just a relentless, you know, he talked about just on the marathon, just what was the word you used? Just different groups, different.
Winning chunks.
Chunks. Well, here it's the day. It's steps. I mean, it's so like, you know, the day starts the night before. It's being preparation is your separation, and having a plan, and just being relentless in it. Every day was fourth and goal. And, you know, I would sleep in the baseball coach's, the assistant's office at LSUA. I can remember that summer. But I didn't even like take time to find an apartment till like August. We had to get all the hay in the barn. School was going to start. So I would wake up whenever the air condition made a loud roar and it would startle me. That would be my alarm clock about 5 or 6 a.m. And I'd wake up, it'd be hot because I guess the air condition would cut off at a certain point around midnight. I don't know. But it was just waking up and trusting our staff to do the same thing. It was like blue chips. To where we would just drive around. NEIA didn't have, I don't know if they still have as many rules as the NCAA. And we just went and just met players, signed players, did what we had to do. And I guess it was just a culture of just work ethic. Like Colossians 3:23 says, whatever you do, work at it with all your heart. As for working for the Lord, not for men. And that's what we did, is we worked at it with all our heart. We also had a great mentor program. I took this idea from Mike White, who was at Louisiana Tech at the time, and he had a mentor program. I said, I would like to do that as well. There was a church in Alexandria that a guy or two went up to Ruston for a day or two and just kind of sat back and just saw. We incorporated the same thing, and it wasn't necessarily just one. It was men in the community that were a part of our program that our staff couldn't just pour into these players with so much to do, you know, and some were, you know, different levels of mentors and what they kind of did and what they, you know, whether it's a high five before game but we would every year start off with a meal with these mentors. And I think that played a part in our culture, in our bond, in the community, catching on to what we were doing. So, you know, we talked about like three words. We wanted to serve, you know, rebounding for others. We wanted to work. We wanted to work and live our dream. And then we wanted to be a family. We wanted to be a great teammate. So those are some of the key things that, looking back, that we try to implement. And I feel like we did a pretty good job of that, of just, you know, workers are winners and winners are workers. And, you know, we rolled our sleeves up and we got after it. And I think the staff was phenomenal and the players bought on, and it just, you know, success breeds success. And we were at the right place at the right time. And it was a fun ride.
I don't think anybody's ever built a garden without humility, right? Because you got to kind of start something knowing that, you know, it's going to take some time and you don't feel entitled at all, because you're not stepping into something that's already been established. So it takes an unbelievable amount of humility, because you're constantly feeling as you're building, not in a bad way, but hey, we're not what we want to be yet. We're not there yet. We haven't done anything yet. We're just getting started. So yeah. You're constantly coming from a state of every day. Like, humility's kicking the door open, literally every single day, in terms of what you're doing and how you're carrying yourself. And then that sets the tone for who you want to bring in, because your culture is going to be reflected by the people walking into your building. And from your staff, it sounds like the way you describe those guys, and obviously it oozes from you, but there's this tone of humility was set from the get-go. And that, to me, was the launching pad for everything you guys did. Even when you had success, you almost had that. You were able to reset yourselves. And so it could be year seven, but the mentality is like, every year is year one in terms of how we're approaching it, even though there had been some success and some NCAA tournament trips and things like that. But that every year is year one mindset that to me is triggered by humility. And you guys, it sounds like that was the driving force in your program.
And we didn't really know the score. We were new to NEIA. We had no idea. We weren't comparing. We just woke up and just appreciative of the opportunity and did our best and really strive for excellence. And whatever happened once we started playing games. And our players, we got a lot of lucky breaks from a guy that was going to go to Southeastern Louisiana. They had a coaching change and he ended up following. He came with me and he became an All-American. And it really just all of our guys, for the most part of our staff, were Louisiana guys. And it was new and it all just caught on. And it was one great times in my career for sure.
The beauty of it is, like you said, you could go to a community center and sign two players. You go by the local playground and watch guys hooping and say, hey, hold on, man. This dude's held court for five games in a row. We need to talk to him.
We used to do a prospect camp. It was pretty cool. We would do them in like different cities. We were like before our time, like with football. Now we would go to different Louisiana cities. And kid you not, Brian Sylvester showed up. I need to refund his money. And he would pay 40. We would say, all right, you want to try out and you want to be part of the new program. And, you know, we've got to pay these coaches. The school's not paying them. These guys are working for free. And $40 a person could get you a tryout. And Brian Sylvester became an All-American. And we won Division I ball games with him. And, yeah, it's pretty wild, like you said, just discovering some stud players. I mean, we had Brandon Moss from Bessemer, Alabama. I went last August to Houston and watched him play against Lance Stevenson and the other guy that played at Kansas State with the Big Three. And
oh, the Big Three. That's right.
That's
yeah. Brent Ellis actually sat out a year. We got him eligible and right, and then he competed he started on the national championship game team.
That's a heck of a way to be able to pull some people. Hey, and you said it yourself. Everything takes a little bit of luck. I like that because realistically, whether it's getting the right people, shots going in, don't get me wrong, a lot of it is repetition and hard work into it. But every now and then you got to get a little bit of luck, right? Whether it's getting a job, whether it's getting a opportunity to play, a shot going in, like all those little things, it does take a little bit of luck.
Hey, time out.
Go ahead.
I got a call. I was in the campus cafeteria in Hammond. Not sure what was going to happen. And the guy called me, I won't say his name. And he said, Larry, I just turned down the job. And I was like, I felt some kind of way. I was like, okay, they didn't pick me first, but he's telling me, he's giving me a heads up. And I was like, well, what should I do? You know, here I am as a Division I assistant, never been a head coach. And he said, Larry, you need to take the job. And let me tell you, it was a pay cut. And wasn't making much money at all.
Yeah,
you talk about luck and God looking out, and I could have easily not gotten that opportunity, and it went my way, and here we are talking about it today.
The best part of it is we have to be careful sometimes when we pray, but because sometimes it's like, all right, get ready, right? So you had that Cedar Rapids experience of what would I do for free? It turns out that you go to LSUA, you pretty much, you're trying to get your coach's free meal in the community or whatever it is. And you're just trying to go somewhere and pass out t-shirts in place of a cheeseburger. But no, it went full circle in terms of you're almost doing that for free. None of us have ever worked a day in our life at the same time.
Fact.
That when you look at it that way, then we've been the lucky ones in terms of getting to do what we love. That there's nothing. I told the players here at that last game, I was like, this is part of what happens in our profession. We can't ask for all the joy and not understand that there is going to be some pain on the other side of it because of a labor of love does have a cost. And so that's part of what we do sometimes. But what a great story about just from A to Z, what you guys did with that program. That's awesome.
And I'm proud of that program. I've been here at Troy 3 years, and they are, I believe today, they're in Langston playing in my buddy Chris Wright's region. They've started the NEIA National Tournament, and I think they've made it each year since I've left too, 3 years in a row. So the program was left in a really good place, and actually got a couple players. One at Sam Houston State was named the Conference USA Defensive Player of the Year. And then Christian Colvin, another player that played at LSUA right before I left, was at UAB, and now he just finished up. He's currently in his Oklahoma State his final year of playing college basketball. So it's been really cool to see, you know, coaches like you need to call Jay Smith at Texas State University, get him on one of these Rising Coaches. You have a lot to talk about to him and to be able to keep in contact with, you know, former coaches and former players. That's what it's all about.
That's the biggest thing that I have been learning is starting to stay in contact with them, because once people go, just the progression, and I never really got it because I was always a younger coach. And now I'm at the point where I've been in the profession for, 8 years now, 9 years, and you're starting to realize that once they go on, like some of my former players are posting that they have families now and all this stuff. And it's crazy to think, oh, geez. But at the same point, it's awesome. And I was just sending a message the other day. Congratulations. I saw you got like your little kid. That's awesome. It's crazy to see, man. But once you start seeing it from this side, it truly is an honor. It's actually cool. So that being said, there is one thing that I wanted to make sure to ask, because I feel like you have got this question, I am sure. I saw news articles about you after leaving the head coaching position to go over to Troy, LSUA, and there's all these different things. What was the reason and kind of the thought process of leaving to be a head coach and wanting to go to the Division I level as an assistant? And how is that transition?
Scott Cross and I worked together 2 years, as I mentioned earlier, at UT Arlington. Yep. And he called me. I'll never forget. It was a Friday night. And when he offered me the position, I literally drove to Biloxi on Sunday, stayed with a coaching friend of mine, and woke up. I told him I'd be there Monday morning at 9 a.m., and I was. And it was an easy answer. It was a quick decision, and I just wanted to have a new challenge. I wanted to live life, as I like to say, and do something different and be on the Division I level again. And I went to the NCAA tournament with John Brady as a graduate assistant. We went to Birmingham and played, and, you know, that was cool. But I guess things had kind of run its course and felt like we did what we could do there. We went to numerous Fab Fours and, as you mentioned, played for a national championship. We did, you know, I like to say a lot with a little. And it just was God's, you know, telling me, you know, Proverbs 16:9 says we can plan in our heart, but it's our steps. But God's the one that directs them. And that's where he's led me to Troy to work with a great man. When Scott Cross calls, coaches should listen and players should too. And he's awesome. It's everything that I thought it would be for these 3 years. I've learned so much. And that's really what I wanted to do, is to learn and grow. You know, I'd show up to the office and it would be kind of me and maybe a volunteer that was fresh out of college. It was, you know, young guy. And, you know, every day here has been a clinic to be able to work with Greg Young and Mike Worley for 2 years and Kelvin Lewis and Brandon Gilbert for 3 years. And now Caleb Canales and Scott Campbell for a year, and all under, you know, Scott Cross's leadership, and be able to coach, you know, high level players here. And, you know, every day just taking the stairs and waking up early. And it's, yes, I couldn't have asked or wanted anything more than what it is. And not to even mention the Sun Belt Championships and the two NCAA tournament bursts that we have. And it's worked out so far. And I don't know what the next step will be, but I just felt like not getting anywhere from, say, LSUA, and wanted to, you know, expand and grow and take the next step. And sometimes you got to take whether it be a lateral step to get to the next one. You don't really know how the dots connect, but sometimes you do have to make that move. And it wasn't just professionally. I think it was personally a little bit too, just to, you know, I've been in Louisiana for my whole life, except for 2 years in Arlington, and wanted to get out and see the Sun Belt Conference and play in different cities and venues and be on a higher stage. I kind of did the Red River thing for 9 years, and it was a good timing, and it worked out, and I'm glad. I'm thankful for it.
Yeah. No, speaking of take the stairs, I was just talking to Kelvin yesterday. He's a friend of Rising Coaches, a member of Rising Coaches. He's been on our pod and came to our watch party last year in San Antonio, and got to spend some time with him. Phenomenal human being. He actually called me a couple years ago, just out of the blue, just wanting to touch base, and it's blossomed into a great relationship. So I was thrilled to catch up with him on the phone yesterday and be able to say congrats. And we exchanged a little information about potential opponents. We'll leave it at that. But that's good problems, because that means you guys are about to keep playing. Talk a little bit about Coach Cross, because it bothers me in our profession when aren't as – and I say this knowing that Scott Cross is the last person that cares about what I'm about to say. But this guy's a beast. And I just share about what is his – I think every great coach has a superpower. What is Scott Cross in terms of – and now you've been at him with two different places, so you knew what you were getting coming into the door, which is great as well. What is Scott Cross's superpower? Or is there more than one in terms of his ability to put a program together and be successful?
Coach Caleb Canales was the third assistant at UT Arlington whenever I was leaving LSU in Baton Rouge. And he actually went on to call NBA timeouts as interim head coach for the Portland Trail Blazers. And he's been in different professional leagues and been in the NBA for a long time, but he's our associate head coach. And we were talking about a week ago about, and I forgot the line. I hope I don't now. It's like everybody wants to be a beast until it's time to do what beasts do. And, you know, Scott Cross is a beast. He does it every single day. I guess his superpower is, and that's a word that I like to use too, is every day. And Coach Cross is an everyday guy. He takes the stairs literally and figuratively. He's like a machine. I mean, he's just he's a coaching wizard, as I like to say. And he's a great person. But when it comes as far as like working for him, he's not a micromanager. He gives you lots of flexibility. He gives you freedom. And sometimes I still feel like I am, you know, a head coach in some ways, in some areas within the program where he lets you, you know, he trusts you. So, you know, his superpower, he's Superman in the weight room. I always tell him, I say, Coach Cross, there's not another coach, whether it be at your age or any head kid, whatever, like when it comes to going and whether it's maxing or lifting weights or staying in shape, like he is, and I got to brag too. I always like to say, Coach Cross, I don't think there's another person that can run a mile. Maybe there is out there. Somebody can get like a 5:45, I'd say now. But anyway, from his strength into my running, we make a good little combination. But, all jokes aside, like he is a good person first, and he's funny to be around. If you really, you know, you get to know him, you really don't see that side of it from the outside looking in. But you know, he does have a sense of humor. But you know, technology. He was doing graphics back in 2000. I'm gonna age myself 4, 5, 6, like. I'm talking like before he was before this thing. He was from his mail out system to just being like organized with phone calls. And, you know, he's actually the one that put me on the Microsoft Outlook, like the contacts and the just being able to take notes and phone conversations. And, you know, he makes these things, he puts this thing to shame, makes that look, you know, like in the 18th century. But you know, he does it all. Like there's nothing that he can't do. Like he sees the game. I mean, you name it, like he's that's why he's the coach of the year. And those were the three little small letters I had on my whiteboard in my office for the past 3 years was my goal, COYs. And then I really felt like he's deserving to be coach of the year. And we're very happy that the conference and everyone else is kind of sees what we see on a daily basis. And he's been doing this for decades, and he's going to continue to get opportunities to elevate Troy and who knows other programs down the road whenever that time comes, if he feels, you know, the calling to do that. But he's a winner. I guess if I was to say what his superpower is he's a winner, and he knows what it takes, and he's not afraid to do the work and what it takes. So he's, you know, shows up early, works late, and also juggles and does a good job of being a dad, a husband. So, you know, he just kind of has it all. He doesn't have any hiccups in his game, if you will.
Yeah. Yeah. I wanted you to share that for two reasons. One, just so people understand, how good this guy really is, because again, he's not a guy that's seeking cameras. He's not splashing himself on Instagram or Twitter. He is just, like you said, an everyday guy. He's a coach's coach. I wanted you to share that just to give him his flowers on this platform because he deserves it. But also, I want the young coaches to hear part of taking the stairs is not skipping steps. And Scott Cross doesn't skip steps.
No, no.
And so sometimes in our profession, young guys want to skip steps. Mm-hmm. And that's great. Ambition, nothing wrong with it. Love it. But it's one thing to be ambitious, but when that ambition possesses you to the point where you're not encompassed and engrossed in what you're doing, and literally, like you said, taking the stairs where you are, then you're going to trip because you're trying to skip steps. And that's how you trip and fall.
Now, I want to say, I got long legs. So when I'm walking up some stairs, sometimes I do skip some steps, but.
Yeah, you're on your phone, Doug, all the time. So that's a lack of focus. That's not your legs. I'm not buying that.
Oh, no.
I work with you too long. I know why that would go down. But I wanted to say that. I wanted you to say that about Coach Cross. So young coaches that follow our pod and listen to us can understand that it's perfectly fine to do it the way he's done it. It's perfectly fine to be an everyday guy, to just, like you said, talk about a guy that go ahead.
He had zero wins. Like the other day I saw something. I remember win number 300 because that was at Georgia State, my first year here on the road. And that was big. And now he's already like, wow, we've won 50 more games since then. Man, time flies. But he had zero wins, and he wasn't about to get the UT Arlington job. It was crazy, you know, that month while we were all assistants there, and they were bringing in, you know, five other guys. I remember sitting in on the interviews, and they ended up finally realizing it was a God thing. They hired him. And then it was crazy on the end of it. He got screwed to say the least, and he goes to TCU for 1 year as an assistant. TCU lands Coach Cross, and he won 20 in the first two combined. But since then, in the last 5 years, he's won over 20 each time. So, like, he's going to win 500-plus games. He just is. And just to say that he was, you know, in his mind, he would probably say that at once upon a time, like, he was – just, you know, nobody, and his assistant coach in the Southland Conference at the time, and working hard, and like you said, just, you know, he was getting there early way back. It's neat to see what he was doing then as an assistant, he's still doing as a head coach. And you talked about the steps, and I'll just real quick say this about me. And for those young coaches that might be out there listening on Rising Coaches here, this podcast has been awesome. So I was a student manager turned. Actually, I was. I didn't talk about my Xavier NEI days when I was a sophomore. I was a walk-on for a semester with Danton Jackson as an assistant and Dale Valdry as the head coach at Xavier in New Orleans, and became a student manager and then ended up transferring to LA. I was in the portal before the portal. I started at Louisiana Tech in Holt Ruston. I went to Xavier, went to LSU, even took a class at Grambling State. Man, I got to get four transcripts whenever it's time to send mine places. But so I've hit them all. I was a graduate assistant, and then I went to third assistant at UT Arlington, Southeastern Louisiana, second assistant, worked my way up to associate head coach, and then became a head coach, and then kind of, you know, did it again by going to, you know, Troy with operations, and now an assistant coach. And so, yeah, I mean, you can't be wanting to just jump up, and I mean, you've got to, it doesn't always work like an elevator example. You've got to be able to continue to take those stairs and hit a bunch of steps. And I'm blessed to be able to be around. We've got four, and I've got to shout these guys out in my office there. Coach Caleb Canals calls our room the solutions room. We've got Isaac Stewart. Man, when I met him, I said, he's going to be the next Steve Kerr. We've got Charlie Taylor, who's a graduate assistant as well. He was a manager at Auburn. He's in his first year. Tyler Henderson from Houston, Kelvin brought him in this year. He's been great. Aiden Klee came in as a student manager from Lynn in Florida. So, you know, those four guys, not to mention our other student managers, but I'm able to be around these young guys. And now that I'm not necessarily, I may think and feel like I'm still a young coach, but to be able to pour back and to mentor on a daily basis inside that office, and we get things done left and right, from video to operations to workouts to whether it's checking, they do a phenomenal job. So I just want to say thank you to those guys publicly, and those guys have bright futures, and I'm looking forward to following their steps along the road.
With the wonderful background that you've had, the experiences that you have, humility is always a word that we talk about on here, and you exemplify exactly that. It's evident that just the success, one, as a head coach, and still taking, throwing it off, saying I had great assistants, some great players around me, and now being able to be an assistant, winning their conference this year, seeing you guys still succeed, more humility spewing out. Like, it's evident that's exactly what a lot of you, your career and your path exemplifies. So that's great to hear for people as well.
Yeah, no doubt. Keep surrounding yourself with great people, man.
Hey, when we would lose, and I always would tell people, fortunately, my players, they won a bunch of close games. I don't remember too many numbers and things, but this always stands out to me. In Alexander, we were 48-23 in games decided by 5 points or less. I was like, wow, those guys, they bailed me out a lot of close games. But when you lost, we kept our head down. We kept our head up and we kept working. When we won, we would keep our head down and keep working. No matter you win or lose, you know, you can't get too high. You can't, but you got to just keep working. And that was a key thing. You talked about humility and, you know, not getting too, you know, prideful of us and doing this and that. We continue to keep your head down and keep working.
Keep your head down and keep working. Keep going. Because you never know what's on the other side of it. You never know.
No, you know, this coaching thing is this interesting. So now, especially nowadays in 2026, you never know what's around the corner. You got champions adjust. I keep throwing out these nuggets that I've been able to work with the guys like Caleb Canals on the staff at Troy. And that's just, it's so true. Champions adjust. And we've done a good job of doing that here at Troy. I mean, we lost 4 of 5 starters last year. We got guys all over the country, and we bring back a bunch of guys that just limited roles off the bench. And here we are, we're cutting down nets again in March and getting ready to see what happens in the tournament.
Yeah, no, that's, I love it, man. No, you guys are, and again, I just want to make sure we put Coach Cross out there today, because again, you don't hear his name out there a lot, but the beauty of it is he's perfectly fine with that, because in his mind, Troy is the only program in the world. And that's what makes him so good. And as you guys move forward into this month, man, just keep making memories. That's what this month's about, right? If you play, you play, you stay. I would not want to play you guys in the next week here, because I know what's going on in that building. And listen, if I'm an opponent, I want no part of Troy. Trust me.
But also, thank you for being on here. I know this is a little bit of, I don't want to say downtime for you, because you're in between the tournament that you guys just won to the NCAA tournament, but this is actually one of the this is the second season, right? This is the second roundabout for this year. So just being able to take a little bit of time, thank you very much for hopping on here. I know those people.
Thank you both.
Of course. And for all of you out there, the humility from us, thanking you for listening and tuning in to another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. Your host, Alan Major, Doug Caputo. Keep working, keep rising. Help your players get more out of their training sessions with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball. As the official shooting machine of Rising Coaches and the number one selling shooting machine in the world, Dr. Dish provides an experience packed with more reps, more motivation, and just plain out more fun. Be sure to mention Rising Coaches for an additional $250 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together. Thank you.